Well, now the government's new recycling plan, how will it work across the country and will it make recycling less confusing? The Ministry for the Environment's proposed transforming recycling plan includes a 20 cents return scheme for most drink containers, though it excludes dairy containers. It's one of three key elements to the proposal to reduce the amount of waste going to landfill and to bring recycling up to international standards. The other two proposals in the plan are for standardised curbside recycling collections across all regions and for households and businesses to separate food scraps from general waste. It's part of a broader ambition on the Ministry of the Environment to bring the country into a, quote, low-emission circular economy. Submissions on the plan closed last night. Local Government New Zealand says there's a strong appetite for standardised recycling across our 67 councils, but only a handful are geared up for it. We'll hear more in a moment, but first, Roderick Boyes, Principal Advisor at the Ministry for the Environment, overviews the plan, starting with the beverage container scheme.
That is all about essentially applying a refundable deposit, which incentivises people to return their beverage containers for recycling no matter where they are, i.e. at home or out and about. The second part of the proposals is around improvements to household curbside recycling. And there's actually quite a few elements to that, but probably the main ones that people would be interested in are the standardisation of the materials that everybody collects up and down the country. So this is in order to make it easier for people to understand what they should be recycling at their curbside. And then the other one that's probably of interest is also the food waste proposal. So the proposal that councils collect food waste up and down the country. It could be food and green waste as well, I should add. And then the third proposal is the separation of business food waste. And that is obviously also a proposal that we're consulting on. And that would also be kind of like about, you know, obviously seeing food waste diverted from landfill into composting systems up and down the country.
Can you give us an idea of timeline first, though? Because some of this is going to be very ambitious and we'll go into that in more detail. What timeline are you working to?
Yeah, so the proposals are a package of proposals and they have sort of a bunch of different timelines within each element of those. So I'll briefly talk through them. So from the standardizing curbside, the proposal is that the core set of materials is you know, most councils are already there. So it's not a big change for most. It's often with most councils, it's just one plastic type that is the outlier at the moment. So the core materials are being collected by everybody. So we think that can probably happen if it goes ahead, that is, pretty quickly. So next year, perhaps. 2025 is the container return scheme. So that's the beverage container return scheme. That's probably as soon as that could possibly happen, mainly because it requires new legislation and it's quite a big deal. So industry needs time to get ready for that one. And that, once again, that's if it proceeds. And 2026 is this is where all councils would be offering curbside recycling collections as proposed. There's only a few that don't currently. And by 2030, that's when we would hope that everybody would be offering food scraps collections and councils would also be achieving performance targets, which are also part of the proposals by then with respect to their curbside collections.
Let's look at the exact impact then on the beverage container recycling scheme. Just explain what you envisage people will be able to do by 2025 and how.
You would expect to see from 2025 onwards the establishment of a new return network. And that return network is proposed to include retailers. The idea, and this is how it works overseas, is that a reverse vending machine is a device that basically receives a eligible beverage container and then gives consumers their refundable deposit back. And that is a machine which is very efficient and effective at doing that. And so supermarkets and other retailers that sell beverages could use that technology to facilitate this transaction at their sites. And the idea behind doing it at a retail setting is this is a place that consumers are already traveling to when they're going out and about. There would also be depots potentially. So a depot is where you can receive larger volumes, and that might be in an industrial park or a commercial zone, something like that. And so this is where the kind of the commercial recovery of those beverage containers would go. Consumers could go to these sites as well. And then the third option is around what's called an OTC or over-the-counter site. This is where it's low volume, perhaps it's a dairy in the remote part of the West Coast or a petrol station. And they would expect to receive probably quite a low volume of containers. And you could also have a limit for that so they don't get flooded with beverage containers. But that's just to sort of plug the gaps between those bigger, higher volume sites. So that's the physical network. And then there's the actual deposit incentive as well, which is the, you know, it's proposed to be a 20 cent refundable deposit. So that's the incentive to obviously recycle those containers and reduce litter.
Now, in is aluminium, steel, tin plate and bimetals, all colours of glass, all single-use plastic beverage containers, PET1, HDPE2 and PP5. So this is where the numbers start to, you know, people's minds start to boggle. All single-use liquid paperboard beverage containers except fresh milk. What's not in is things made out of materials other than the above, pouches, bladders, they're quite common now, aren't they, food products, and compostable or biodegradable plastics. That is another whole area of confusion for consumers, but excluded. And then fresh milk in all packaging types. Why is dairy and dairy packaging such a heavy use, obviously, for households? Why is that excluded?
Yeah, it's a proposal. So this is what is proposed. So I guess the first reason is and foremost is that it's actually consistent with most schemes globally. So people don't tend to go to the beach with their fresh white milk container and then litter it, if you see what I mean. So the origin of these schemes is actually about litter reduction. Why they were established, but they've obviously evolved since then in terms of other objectives such as recycling outcomes and emissions reductions. But so that's the first reason, is that you don't find milk bottles in the litter stream typically. Consumers tend to consume obviously milk containers at home, and they are actually reasonably good at recycling those milk containers at home. So the problem definition is not quite the same for fresh white milk.
That
are kind of the high level reasons. But again, it is a proposal, and we are aware that there's lots of stakeholders out there who think it should be in. So obviously ministers will need to consider their options as a result of the feedback.
Now let's look at curbside. Two things. First of all, what gets added in, and then second, the standardisation, because this gets to the heart of this in some ways. It's one thing to put your recycling out. The question is what happens to it next. If you add in food and green waste, are many councils in a position to process or deal with that waste? And if so, how?
That's a really good question, and it's exactly why the government has announced, as a result of the climate emergency response fund on Monday, there's a $103 million coming into waste as a result of the emissions reduction plan. And a lot of that funding is for exactly that sort of infrastructure that we don't currently have in New Zealand. I mean, there is obviously composting plants and New Zealand's first large-scale anaerobic digestion plant, which has been built right now in the middle of North Island. So it is out there and it is starting to happen. But if you want to scale this up as is proposed, then obviously you need a lot more infrastructure and obviously the systems to feed the organic materials into those processing plants. So that's why the 2030 timeframe, you can't just build this stuff overnight. It is going to take time. But there's in addition to the budget announcement on Monday, obviously there's the waste disposal levy as well, which is at the moment councils receive half of that waste disposal levy, and it is increasing. And I think you're probably aware of this and covered it off before, but it is increasing quite significantly. It won't pay for all of those services, to be clear, though, but it does certainly help.
But on the business also of curbside standardisation, again, every council, you often have to Google to find out what plastics you can put in or what you can put in or whether they take this or whether they take that. And I'm wondering just how geared are many of the smaller councils in particular are to deal with a standardisation that might be happening in Auckland or Wellington or Christchurch. How realistic is that?
Yeah, and I mean, that's why I kind of mentioned at the beginning that most councils are actually already collecting the core set of materials that are proposed to be standardised. And you've mentioned it's the plastics that people often find the most confusing, and the numbers are a bit confusing. So essentially, the proposal is that it's ones, twos, and fives. So what that is for your listeners' understanding is obviously ones is kind of like your clear soda drink bottles. So it's what you would find in a fridge typically, a refrigerator beverage. HDPE2, that's your milk bottles that have a handle. And there's the natural version of that, which is kind of almost, you can almost see through it. And then there's coloured HDPE, which is like in the janitorials range. So you might find laundry detergents, et cetera, in that. And then from the fives, that's kind of the way of simplistically thinking about it. If you take the ones and twos out of your refrigerator, most of what you see that's left that's a rigid plastic is probably a five. It's your margarine tubs, your ice cream containers, all that sort of stuff. And you can fill fives hot and cold. So that's kind of why the different plastics have different properties is essentially where it comes from. But those five plastics are the vast majority of plastics that are in standard curbside recycling.
Okay. Does that mean that some councils will perhaps collect less? I think there's a three that might be certain shampoo bottles or something like that, just reflecting from my own experience of trying to work out what goes in and goes out. But if we're standardising that, does that mean that some councils might not take stuff they do take now?
Yes, that's possible, but I would also sort of the analysis that's been done suggests that there probably aren't good recycling markets for those materials. Further, some of those materials are also subject to the phase-out proposals, which have also been already determined and consulted upon. So you mentioned the three in particular. So the problem with the three was that some producers using producing meat products were putting them on a three, so that's PVC, and that can't easily be distinguished from the highly recyclable version of the meat tray, which is the one, which is a PET meat tray. So the major supermarkets moved to PET meat trays a long time ago, but there's still a few out there who are using those harder to recycle plastics in terms of the food grade packaging system. And, you know, that's why those materials are proposed to be phased out.
That makes sense. Now, you just raised another important point. Are we actually recycling much of this? Like, we had issues. We knew that China said, and I think another nation as well, said, stop exporting us your plastics, please. And we ended up for a long time with the stockpiling of plastics. People kept recycling, and at least the habit kept up, but we were getting bigger and bigger stockpiles. Where are we at now in actually genuinely recycling, or are we still stockpiling?
Yeah, so the stockpiling thing is sort of a thing of the past in terms of the way the materials were collected and managed. So what's happened in the meantime is there has been a kind of a consolidation towards the ones, twos and fives, irrespective of what the government is doing. And that is in part because of the markets for those materials are good, especially if they're clean and separated. So in other words, the recyclers can get money for them. So that's obviously a key driver. Further to that, there's also been a lot of investment in onshore infrastructure. So, many of the MRFs have received support to install things like optical sorters, which help them improve the quality of the material streams. So that was a part of the previous government's COVID response recovery fund investment. So quite a few of the MRFs have received significant upgrades. So this means that they are able to better separate and manage those materials and effectively monetize them. But also, coming back to the where they're actually going from there, there's also been investment in onshore processing capacity. More manufacturers are starting to want to move to recycled content packaging, which is creating more demand for these materials, both onshore and offshore. So it's that said, there is still challenges in this industry. Obviously, shipping is the challenge for everybody at the moment, things like that. But by and large, that's the point of the proposals. We're trying to consolidate on the plastics that have an economic value that are able to be recycled more easily.
Roderick, quick hit, if you would please, for our business listeners, especially our small business listeners and food producers, 2030, or have I got my date wrong, the separation of business food waste, just to quickly explain what's happening there and who that's going to affect.
Essentially, most of the food waste needs to come out of the landfills by 2030 across the country in order to achieve our emission reduction objectives. Recalling that landfills produce biogenic methane, which is, one of those harder to abate gases. So as councils are investing in these curbside services, you're bringing in processing infrastructure that can also be sized to take the commercial food waste volume. You've got more recycling options available to those businesses. The idea is that they're essentially leveraging the investment in the curbside systems. And, as a result of that, there'll be more operators who are willing to provide commercial recycling services to businesses for food waste.
Roderick, finally, costs. The cost of all this, will it be user pays? Will it be through council rates? Will there be private providers? What are the dollars, as best you know them, around the proposals as they stand, and where do the costs fall?
It's you probably have to do it on an individual proposal basis because it's complicated and it will vary from district to district and region to region, depending on where they're at now, what they have in place. You know, from the perspective of food waste, what are the local, you know, what are the local feedstocks that would go into a composting system? What are the local markets for the materials that would come out of it? So there's not a straight answer, sorry, but sort of pulling back to the container return scheme, essentially, the face value increase of a beverage container is proposed to be, as in accordance with what we've proposed, would be around 26 cents. That's including gist. And obviously, the consumer would get their 20 cent refund when they recycle. So it'd be a face value, it would be a net increase of around 6 cents per container. So that's in line with the proposals. For food waste collections, Tauranga have just rolled out a collection. I believe that it's costing around 80 cents per household per week. So we can come back to you on that one if that's wrong, but it's approximately around that. But with the food waste collections, what you're doing there is you're taking weight out of the general waste collection. And obviously, it depends on whether the household's doing user-paid bags or whether they have a rates-funded waste service or a private service and how they're paying for that. But in principle, anyway, if you're reducing the weight of food waste, which is a heavy waste stream, out of your general waste, you're potentially, hopefully, reducing the costs of the waste disposal service for that household. And that can occur as a, well, I don't need my waste bin collected weekly anymore because all the yucky stuff is in the food waste bin. So therefore, you know, maybe I can go to a fortnightly collection. So there's kind of quid pro quos with that stuff. But nonetheless, that's sort of the indicative costs. When it comes to commercial food waste, that's the proposal is simply that businesses separate it. And it's really up to those local market conditions to determine what the cost of that service would be. What we're trying to do is really change the system and make it easier for businesses and households to do the right thing so that they can reduce their emissions, so that there's less litter, so that they're able to recycle more and New Zealanders can sort of really get on board with being proud of having a great recycling system that works really well again.
Roderick Boys of the Ministry for the Environment. Staying with this recycling proposal, Marty Hoffitz, Chair of the Zero Waste Network. Kia ora, Marty.
Catherine, good morning.
And Morena, and welcome also to Sophie Mander, Chair of the Territorial Authorities Offices, or TAO Forum. This is the nationwide body run by Waste Mins. Sophie, Morena, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Good morning.
Marty, just go quickly, please. What do you like about this plan? What's missing?
I love it all. It's great that we finally got a container return scheme out there, and I like the 20 cents. It'll future-proof it. I guess in our submission, Catherine, from the network and other organizations, we question the reason why milk, fresh milk, is not in the scheme. I know Rod mentioned that in other schemes overseas, it's been excluded, but you got to remember those schemes were set up 40 years ago when milk was delivered in glass bottles to houses, and they weren't a problem. Now it's a single-use packaging. So I know he said you don't see people out and about drinking milk walking down the beach as well, but you don't see people drinking a bottle of scotch walking down the beach as well, and that's in. And the other thing is that all the other milks are in, for all the lactose. So the soy milks are in, everything in Tetra Paks are in, the oat milks are in. So we don't really understand why you wouldn't include fresh milk.
Well, why do you think it is?
Pardon?
Why do you think it's the case that it's not in?
I have no idea. It's in Alberta. I don't think the fresh milk were lobbying against it. So it kind of came out of left field that it wasn't in.
You don't think it's industry pressure? That's interesting. Okay, thank you.
No, I haven't heard any.
Sophie, I'm really interested in the logistics of this. And I mentioned how many councils will be geared up to deal with these new waste streams and what happens once they've gone out to curbside.
Yeah, so we've been looking at this for a number of years now through the TAO forum and fully support this proposal. The councils have been asking for a mandate so that it keeps it simple. At the moment, there's so many different collection systems, and we've been asking for it to be simple, less confusing, consistent, all of those things, so that our behaviour change messaging is the same all across the country. We're pretty excited about it. We really believe that this will make a big difference for people's curbside behaviours.
Yeah, but what about the logistics of dealing with the waste? Are there some councils who won't have the facilities or will need to invest in some facilities to deal with these new waste streams?
For sure. And Rod and the team at the ministry have been looking at the infrastructure across the country currently and making a plan for where we'll need to fill those gaps. So councils will hopefully be supported through the new increases in the waste levy to build some of this new infrastructure, which will then allow us to not have to cart materials from the bottom of the South Island to the top of the North Island and incur those costs through our rates. So investment in infrastructure is pretty critical. And obviously Rod's talked about investment for the organics and the food waste being taken out of bins being covered by the $103 million in the emissions reduction plan. But we're looking forward to an investment for infrastructure in the rest of the recyclable materials coming through the new waste strategy and increase in waste levies.
Sophie Mander, Marty Hoffert, thanks very much.